Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Once a week, no guest, no in-depth investigative report, just questions throughout the entire program, or statements, things that are of importance to you. The program is called Talk Back. You can give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888 during the entire 55 minutes. Before you call in, I'll be sharing the latest on health and healing, including the impact of inflammation in our lifestyles, the power of positive changes, new information on lycopene, what it can do if you have heart disease, and alpha-lipoic acid, an in-depth discussion about prostate health. And more specific, I gave information last week and people wanted to know, okay, what exactly does the pomegranate and green tea and turmeric and broccoli do? I'll go through that. And then from Michael Downey, the truth about male and female sexual dysfunction. We spend billions of dollars a year. Why? Is it necessary? Then, from our environmental segment, from Chris Busby, Fukushima fallout is damaging the thyroids of California babies. This is a new study in the peer-reviewed Open Journal of Pediatrics. Also from Dr. Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeiss, Aldernet. We are in the midst of defeating the largest corporate trade agreement in history, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I'll be sharing some insights of how all of us can work together on this. From Ralph Nader, the Canadian healthcare system has been belittled by those who believe that you should be paying the pharmaceutical company and the insurance industry to guide you in your healthcare selections. Well, Canadians have done it differently. We're going to compare the Canadian healthcare system to Obamacare. And of course, throughout this hour, I'll be taking your calls. So let's begin. There's new information that in The Lancet, oncology, that the more positive lifestyle choices that you engage in, the lower your risk of prostate cancer, the lower your risk of heart disease, the lower your risk of aging prematurely. In fact, blood samples collected from the people, the men in this particular study, showed that they actually would have their cells live a longer life. This was measuring the telomere and what is called telomerase levels. Now, I've mentioned before, here's how it works. Now, I'll give you the overly simplified version. Everything you do, no matter how insignificant, contributes either constructively or destructively, but not always in that moment. In fact, for most occasions, the moment comes and goes and is rather uneventful. So we assume that the sugar we just had in the orange juice or in the coffee or the tea or the cola, well, it, you know, gave a little burst of energy for about 3 or 4 minutes. What's the big deal? Burns out, gets eliminated from the body. So you have some French fries. Not a big deal. Some trans fat, saturated fat, lots of sodium. Your body will pass it out tomorrow. What's the harm? So you had that fried rib or the barbecued chicken, a little alcohol. Every single action of your life is either constructive or destructive to the DNA. Now keep in mind, the DNA has some ways of protecting itself, but not enough. We cannot protect ourselves, for example, when we're growing up against secondhand smoke. And for those of us, in fact, everyone I knew, every single person I knew, grew up in a family where everyone smoked. And everyone in my family smoked except me, my brothers, everyone. But my mother and father smoked an enormous amount. My mother and father smoked 3 to 4 packs of cigarettes a day, each. and they drank, and they ate bad food or unhealthy food, even though they would have thought that it was okay, never took vitamins, didn't exercise, and didn't know how to deal with stress, wonder what the outcome of that would be. Well, they both died at 58, 2 years apart. That's the outcome. But until the time when our cells actually tip into a disease that can be measured and identified and labeled, we have this very unusual concept in American medicine. You either have a classically defined disease or you're well. There's no in-between. So when Bill Clinton went for his annual exam, he was given a clean bill of health. 3 weeks later, he was rushed in for triple bypass surgery of his heart, or he would have died. Well, then how could he have been in good health? The fact is, he wasn't. It's just that he had not manifested the symptoms, and they had not looked for the inflammatory markers, because American medicine does not have the competence or the understanding of how we age, and hence the diseases we suffer from are really a manifestation of the improper way of aging. So, and when you've been so thoroughly indoctrinated, it is not an easy process to get someone just to open up and change the way they've been thinking. Even when faced with the facts, they won't do it. So here's how it works. Every single action in our life will have a consequence, sooner or later. It'll either be a positive consequence, or it'll be a negative one. I can remember looking at the skin, the hands of a famous old actress, and her name was Gloria Swanson, and she was one of the founders of Hollywood. Charlie Chaplin, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., D.W. Griffith, Mary Pickford, these were the people who founded Hollywood, and also their own studio, United Artists. She had been around a long time. I was a young nutrition expert and author, and she called me one day and said, I want to try to change the lunch program in schools in Harlem, and I know that you're very much into this. Could you put together a program? And I did, and I had a chance to meet her and befriended her. She was a phenomenally interesting person. And her sadness in her life was because of so many of her older friends that she'd grown up with that were sick and dying or dead. And she once turned to me and she says, this is the part, Gary, that I hate. I said, what's that? And she says, waiting for the day when I die, but watching the people who go before me, knowing my day will come. Now, I'm in my 20s and she's in her mid-70s. And it's hard when you're young to appreciate what someone with that wisdom and insight is sharing with you. And though I tried, I could never, I don't think anyone can ever fully appreciate what it means to be at past the lifespan. And she was past the lifespan at that point. Well, there are a lot of people who are past the lifespan today, past 77, 78 years of age. It doesn't mean they're going to die tomorrow. But if you're the average person, you won't reach that. You know, if you do, you'll be very sick. It's the exceptional person that lives 1, 2, 3, 4 years beyond that. Well, what causes them to live longer or shorter? Almost inevitably, it's the total accumulation of all the different choices they made, which contribute to a longer life and health and protecting of your organs, and which almost imperceptibly cause them to be damaged. That's what this study was showing, this Lancet study. And it was proving it by looking at the chromosomes, which shorten with cellular aging. And at the ends of these chromosomes are caps called telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S. And the longer they are, the longer the cell lives. The shorter they are, the shorter the cell lives. When you don't exercise, shorter. When you smoke, drink alcohol, shorter. When you're stressed, depressed, anxious, shorter. When you don't get a good night's sleep, shorter. When you live in a toxic environment or are exposed to toxins in the air or water, shorter. When you have nutritional deficiencies, shorter. When you eat highly processed, pro-inflammatory beverages and foods, shorter. When you have pesticides from the foods you eat, shorter. So those are some of the things that shorten the telomeres and hence adversely affect the chromosomes and hence biologically age you. Just the opposite is true. Exercise, good air, clean water, good night's sleep, quality relationships, good nutrition, not overeating, caloric restriction, not fat, nutrient-dense foods, excellent. Juicing, cleansing, longer. So the idea is come down on the side of longer telomeres, longer life. Now, I mentioned that inflammation plays a big role in this, and it sure does. For example, this is from the Canadian Medical Association Journal. And here's what it says. Chronic inflammation impacts healthy aging on all levels. And they're looking at 3,000 middle-aged participants in the Whitehall 2 study. And then they looked at 10,000 British civil servants over 5 years. For 25 years, every 5 years they'd do a new assessment. And what they found was that those who age prematurely and have heart disease and those who don't, it's all about how many inflammatory markers you have in your blood, including interleukin-6. The more interleukin-6 you have, quote, you reduce the odds of experiencing successful aging by 47%, elevating your risk of undergoing cardiovascular events by 64%, and more than double the risk of non-cardiovascular death in comparison to subjects who had lower inflammatory agents. Now, go back in time. Go back 20 years. Go back to 1994. And that's when I started talking about getting an annual checkup to have your homocysteine, fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, all measured, because these are the inflammatory markers. And you can feel great. You could look great. But inside your body, you could have a biological time bomb. And it's only when you get this inexpensive, easy-to-do blood chemistry. And this study is just one more showing that if you have these inflammation markers in your body, you're going to die sooner. And we don't want that. So, look, if you had elevated homocysteine, I could give you a protocol for trimethylglycine, B12, folic acid, B6, and that could bring it right down from, let's say, 18, 20, down to about 7 or 8. But you got to know it's elevated before you have your stroke. One other thing can help lower your risk of stroke, according to the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. They looked at 14 randomized double-blind studies, 14, involving 55,000 people. Those that had the highest level of B6, B12, and folic acid, things I just mentioned, as compared to a placebo, had the least stroke. So that's, and this is 55,000 people in 14 major randomized double-blind trials. So it's not like we don't have the science on our side. We have all the science on our side. And for those of you who want to help yourself lose weight, in the peer-reviewed journal Nature, considered the most respected scientific journal in the world, there was a meta, meaning multiple, review, and they found that, quote, richness and protection against obesity from gut bacteria, meaning good probiotics, sauerkraut, the good bacteria you're going to get in your cultured products. Now, I'm sure most of the people in this audience are taking anywhere between 5 to 30 billion of those a day, and that's allowing you to live a longer life, and that is allowing you to also be less overweight. For those of you who use alpha-lipoic acid, alpha, A-L-P-H-A, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, this is an important nutrient. According to the peer-reviewed journal trials, they found that when you take alpha-lipoic acid and inositol, B-complex, among postmenopausal women, you reduce metabolic syndrome, which is diabetes. It can lead to breast cancer, can lead to heart disease, and you reduce it. So by a tremendous amount. So take your alpha-lipoic acid. I'm suggesting 600 milligrams three times a day. From the British Journal of Nutrition, a study that was looking at lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, lycopene and also lutein, and it reduced the thickness in the plaque, and so it makes you less susceptible to having atherosclerosis. 20 milligrams of lutein will do the trick. 20 milligrams of lycopene will do the trick. And also, men, if you want to reduce your risk of diabetes, according to the peer review Diabetes Care, the omega-3 fatty acids can help do that. 1,000 milligrams twice a day. That's just the ticket. And also green tea and vitamin E enhance exercise benefits in men and women over the age of 50. 400 units of vitamin E. And if you exercise 30 minutes of moderate intense power walking 6 days a week, you can make a difference. All right, so this was published in the Journal of American College of Nutrition. Omega-3 fatty acids could help protect the brain from the effects of alcohol. This is from the Congress of European Society of Biomedical Research on Alcoholism. DHA, an omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acid that is very diminished in most people's diets, ends up protecting you against dementia. And by the way, almost all the alcoholics I've ever met and counseled had different forms of dementia in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Quote, 90% reduction in neuroinflammation and neuronal death in DHA-treated cells in comparison to untreated cells. So take your DHA and protect your brain cells, especially if you've had a problem drinking. And finally, from the American Journal of Public Health, Americans are living longer and healthier, but only one segment. The rest are living shorter and unhealthy, so we seem to be a nation divided, and that's unfortunate. For the men in the audience or the women who are going to encourage the men to do something good about their prostate, last week on this program, I mentioned that there were four target foods: pomegranate, green tea, turmeric, and broccoli. And then the question is, what in them? Why should we take these? Okay, simple. Pomegranate specifically is concentrated in the prostate tissue. It supports your body's system of removing senescent, meaning programmed cells that are dead when you need them to get out of the body. Pomegranate promotes a healthy level of inflammation response and inhibits androgen receptor expression. It also inhibits abnormal cell migration. Green tea has a chemical in it called EGCG, a catechin, specifically concentrated in the prostate tissue where it regulates your prostate-specific antigen production to maintain healthy PSA levels. It also helps modulate genetic expression activity of the androgen receptors, and it helps the body detox. Turmeric promotes a healthy level of curcumin in the body, and that helps modulate cell signaling mechanisms, inhibiting abnormal cell adhesion and migration, and it promotes healthy cell proliferation. Broccoli helps regulate enzymes, mainly your phase 2 detoxifying enzymes, in your gut and liver tissue that helps render harmful dietary molecules harmless. It helps promote healthy PSA levels, and it supports regulation of cell growth and transcription factors and normal production in the body. So that's the reason why I would use those. That's what makes it important. Now, I wanted to give a look at some of our issues, and then, we time permitting, I'll come back. And I do want to take your calls throughout our whole show. Let's start with Charlottesville, Virginia. Joe. Hi, Joe. You're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for all your great information. I'm a longtime listener. I go way back to Holism as a Worldview.
Well, that's a while back.
Yeah, it is. Well, you've been a tremendous motivating factor in my life. I've become a vegan. I exercise vigorously. I take no drugs, many supplements. I'm in excellent health. So thank you for everything. My question for today was, I'll be going to China, so getting on an airplane, and I would like to bring a lot of my supplements. Is there any restriction? Does the TSA inspect them? Are there any restrictions on any of these?
No. I've never had a problem, and I always take mine. I even take mine in a little unusual way. I put all my powders into different bags, and I mix it all together.
Yeah.
And I'll put all the different powders together in 1 gallon bag, and I might have 2 or 3 gallons. And then what I do, I simply take the label, and I glue it on each of the bags.
Oh, uh-huh.
So this way, they say, "What's this?" I'll say, "Well, those are nutritional supplements."
Okay, great.
I've never had them do anything.
They don't actually take samples or anything of any of those.
No, and I fly an awful lot. Just last week alone, I was in 6 airplanes.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked you, because, you know, I do a lot of supplementation and take a lot of your, you know, powders, the greens and reds and protein shakes and whatever. So I was just wondering, you know, if I could take them on the flight with me.
You won't have any problem. And when you get to China, keep in mind that the bacteria in China coexist with the normal bacteria within the Chinese population.
Yes.
Much like our bacteria does. I know people from Mexico come to the United States and will get amoebic dysentery from our water.
Yes.
But then you have the understanding that almost all the water in China is polluted. So try to get yourself a brand name that is recognizable.
Yes.
From might cost you a little bit. That's what I do. And also take a portable water filter, which I always do.
Yes.
I don't care where I'm at. I then know that I can drink any water and it'll be safe. But a lot of people don't realize, when you go into a hotel, like in India or some other country, and you're taking a shower, that water's going in your mouth.
Yes.
And so you got to be conscious of this when you're brushing your teeth. That's why, I'll give you an example. Let's say that I'm in the Dominican Republic, and I'm with my brothers and some friends, because we were down there looking at the aloe vera plantations,
yes,
which they have the largest that I know of in the world. And it looks like the moonscape. You go from very dense, tropical, humid up into the mountains, and suddenly it's just very bone dry. And I wanted to see how they grow them. And it was all grown with pesticides, and there was a kid with had a backpack of DDT, and he was just spraying it. I remember I was watching him, and he was following some kind of insect around this one particular plant. He must have sprayed a half a cup of it on that plant. He had ulcers up and down his legs. And they would take these bulldozers and just bulldoze everything out of the ground, whether it was immature or overdone. Take them in there and load them up on the floor, dirt floor. This looked like an airplane hangar. And then they had these little tables lined up that looked like a supermarket checkout. And they had 2 tubs. And they had plastic containers in these tubs. And the guy would sit there with a flay knife and take off the skins and throw the gel into these tubs. And they'd take this big gallon of some chemical preservative and put it in there. And then that went off to the United States. then in the United States, they would then process it, but then say from Arizona or from Texas.
Yes.
And instead of being organically grown, certified in the United States. In any case, I was posing as a person wanting to buy aloe, therefore they took me around and showed me everything. But in the process, here you are in Santo Domingo, and you have some five-star resorts. Well, they have their own generators. Everywhere else in the island, electricity goes out all the time. So people want to go downtown, including my brothers and these buddies of mine, and they want to go to some of these restaurants that were on the water that were beautiful, aesthetically beautiful, and the music. And they're looking at the menu, and I say, before you order, let me go back in the kitchen. Oh, Gary, you're going to embarrass again. You know, don't, you know, they're good. I said, how do you know they're good? You don't know they're good. You don't know what goes on in the kitchen. So I got up and I went back and I went in the kitchen. And all the refrigerator was off. All the doors, refrigerators were open. And all the stuff was right out there, including they had fish that my brothers were going to order. And all the fish was just stunk to high heaven right there. And so that was the reality. Of course, they didn't want to pay attention to me. And after the third restaurant, they said, Gary, you go eat someplace and we're going to go eat without you. So I said, fine. Next day, they all were sick. In any case, I went to the farmer's market, bought my produce, took it back to the hotel, got water, and washed it all. Then I went down to the chef and I said, how much does a meal cost? He said, what meal? I said, well, what's your most expensive meal? He said, oh, it's about $35. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $40 and won't use any of your food. And let me cook my own meal. He looked at me like I was a complete idiot. You're going to pay me for you to cook a meal? And yeah, it's worth it. He said, why is it worth it? I said, what do you think it would cost someone to be in bed sick with a mimic dysentery? And he just laughed. And so I went ahead and I made my own meals. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that, nor would anyone allow you to do that. But almost everywhere I go in the world, I go in the kitchen. If they don't allow me in the kitchen, I don't eat there.
Yes.
Because you never know the hygiene. And that's what nails people. Polluted water, dirty hands, unsanitary. And I just don't think people have a clue about how unsanitary most people are who touch your food.
Yeah, and I don't think the Chinese are not very sanitary. At least the Chinese restaurants here are not.
Oh, no, no. Look, it's something that you're going to find in almost every culture. You'll find those in a culture that are educated and hygienic and those who are not. So just be careful, because otherwise what's the purpose going on a great trip to a great country where you have so much to learn and so many wonderful places to see, and you end up then being dehydrated and having massive diarrhea.
Yes.
What's the point of that? All right.
Thank you very much, Gary. And your JFK series was fantastic.
I appreciate that. I'm going to, on tomorrow's program, I'm going to be giving an update, because over the last 12 hours, some brand new information about the JFK assassination has occurred. We'll be on the head of that, including a new film of the assassination has appeared.
Oh, terrific.
That has the different shot showing Kennedy getting the headshot. Also, one of the doctors, I'll share this with you now, since, you know, I think it's important that we know the truth, because sometimes when enough people are interested in the truth, someone says what the heck and comes forward. This is from a physician, and I'll give you the background here, and I'll quote him exactly. All right, this is Dr. Arden Gifford, G-I-F-F-O-R-D. I was in the emergency room as a third-year medical student watching the events of the JFK arrival. Although I did not have any clinical responsibility, only for chiefs of service, I saw and learned directly what happened. Notice the sharp cut over the right eye of the president, about 1.5 above on forehead. A high-velocity bullet will make a small puncture wound on entry and then explode in the triangular function as you see there. This is clearly obvious to any doctor seeing JFK's wound. As the pressure wave flowed through the fluid of the brain, the slowing spread to a cone shape to blow out the back of the head dropping the skull on the back of the car that Jackie and Secret Service tried to pick up. It sprayed blood and brain material in the mouth of the police officer at the back left of the car. The bullet came from the right front on a horizontal trajectory, had a pinpoint entry wound, and blew out horizontally the back of the skull. The bullet wound in the back was just over the thin part of the scapula, which is transparent when clean and dry and paper thin. The low-velocity bullet with downward trajectory punctured the skin in the thoracic vert, level 3, and did not have enough power to even penetrate the very thin scapula. The bullet fell on the stretcher, clean and unmarked, falling out of the skin only. Dr. Malcolm Perry did a small incision to put a tube in the neck to get the airway. This was not the exit wound. Dr. Perry alone got JFK stable. Now listen to what I'm going to tell you. This is so important. No one's ever heard this before. This is the first time anyone's hearing this. Quote, Dr. Perry got JFK stable to transfer to the neuro ICU to clean up the wound and examine JFK, who was not dead.
Wow.
He, but was decorticate. He would be able to stay for weeks to months in the ICU on life support to allow a thorough management of the case. Two Secret Service agents arrived with drawn sidearms and said, quote, we are taking the body now, end quote. Dr. Kim Clark, a 6'4" towering figure, head of neurosurgery, was so instructed and pulled the plug, resulting in the death of JFK under the instructions of the government agents. He was only given 40 minutes of immediate treatment in the PMH ER, which truly kept him alive, were it not for the government intervention. 1 hour later, after the 13 doctors and other chiefs of service came and observed the events after it happened, I went to a cafeteria large meeting room with a lighted panel some 20 feet long with a Secret Service agent who testified for some 50 to 75 TV radio show news media recorders. The president died and was shot from the right side. 2 hours later, Oswald was found in Oak Cliff in a movie theater and was identified as the person who killed JFK. The doctors in the meeting didn't even know of him or the Texas Book Depository at all. Multiple times, the Secret Service tried to bribe Dr. Perry to not testify about the entry wound, and he would not give in. All the records from all the media recorders were either not printed or sent out and suppressed.
Wow.
How about that?
That is something.
So one more piece to the puzzle that we've not known about from a first-person eyewitness medical doctor. So it just adds to it.
Yes.
All the best. Thank you for calling.
Okay,
have
thank
a great
you, Gary.
Trip.
Bye.
Now, this is from our environmental section. This is from Chris Busby, who I filmed in England 4 years ago for our special on Fukushima. This is what he has to say, and this is published in The Ecologist, a very respected publication. Quote, a new study on the effects of tiny quantities of radioactive fallout from Fukushima on the health of the babies born in California shows a significant excess of hypothyroidism caused by the radioactive contamination traveling 5,000 miles across the Pacific. The article will be published this coming week in the peer-reviewed journal Open Journal of Pediatrics. Congenital hypothyroidism is a rare but serious condition normally affecting about one child in 2,000, and one that demands clinical intervention. The growth of children suffering from the condition is affected if they are left untreated. All babies born in California are monitored at birth for thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, levels in blood, since high levels indicate hypothyroidism. Joe Mangano and Dr. Janet Sherman of the Radiation and Public Health Project, and Chris Christopher Busby, guest researcher at Jacobs University, Bremen, examined congenital hypothyroidism rates in newborns using data obtained from the state of California over the period of Fukushima explosions. Their results are published in their paper, Changes in Confirmed Plus Borderline Cases of Congenital Hypothyroidism in California as a Function of Environmental Fallout from the Fukushima Nuclear Meltdown. The researchers compared data for babies exposed to radiation iodine-131 and born between March 17th and December 31st, 2011, with unexposed babies born at the same period of time. Confirmed cases of hypothyroidism defined by as those with TSH levels greater than 29 units increased by 21% of the group of babies that were exposed to excess radioactive iodine in the womb. Same group of children had a 27% increase in borderline cases. Contrary to many reports, the explosion of the reactors and spent fuel rods of Fukushima produced levels of radioactive contamination which were comparable with Chernobyl releases in 1986. Using estimates made by the Norwegian Air Laboratory, it is possible to estimate that more than 250 PBQs of iodine-131 were released at Fukushima. This is also predicated by comparing cesium-137 estimates with 131 releases from Chernobyl, quantities which caused the thyroid cancer epidemic in the Ukraine and parts of the Russian Republic. So that's the latest. So we've been told by our government, our EPA, and our scientists, there was no damage in the United States to anyone's health. Here is a peer-reviewed journal from three dedicated independent researchers who say, not true. We've been damaging thousands of babies' thyroids. And from Dr. Margaret Flowers, we have this. This is from Alternet, Kevin Zees, Dr. Margaret Flowers. The article is entitled, We Are in the Midst of Defeating the World's or the Largest Corporate Trade Agreement in History. These are time of great secrecy and misinformation. Government and corporations hide their actions to avoid public disapproval and accountability. Courageous truth tellers are persecuted for exposing the deep corruption. We depend on whistleblowers to expose the lies and shine light on information that is hidden from the public so we can understand what is happening around us. We need to know the truth in order to participate in the great debates that shape our futures. This week we learned that a brave whistleblower gave the text to the full intellectual property chapter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership to WikiLeaks. This text was released to the public and has spurred quite a stir as we discovered that our concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership are justified. We learned that the United States stands out in bullying other countries on behalf of multinational corporations and that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will provide extraordinary patent protections and internet restrictions designed to further enrich the wealthy while the race to the bottom accelerates. A confluence of events this week has weakened the chances of the Trans-Pacific Partnership's survival. One night this week, there was a light brigade actions in 13 cities from coast to coast, and three letters signed by 180 members of the House of Representatives were submitted in opposition to the President's request for fast track, an authority that would allow him to negotiate and sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership before it would go to Congress for limited debate and only an up or down vote. Two letters were signed by Democrats, another by Republicans. Three-quarters of Democrats oppose fast-track, and one-third of Democrats on the committee responsible for fast-track oppose it as currently constituted. The former U.S. Trade Representative said in 2012 that to complete the Trans-Pacific Partnership, quote, we have to go with it now. Now Congress will not consider fast-track until the do-nothing election year of 2014. Okay. Here's my thoughts. All of us should be outraged of the corruption of this president, Congress, and the multi-corporations who were behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is the ultimate gift to 600 corporations. And if we sign this, this becomes the law, not our Constitution, not our EPA, our state rights, not the rules and regulations that currently we live by. And it was all written in secret by lobbyists and lawyers for special interest. Contact your legislator and say that you will vote them out of office in the next election if they do anything but kill the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We don't want it modified. We don't want it improved. We want it dead because it's terrible. At every level, it's terrible. Get rid of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and everything that's associated with it. I'm going to go to more calls here in a second. Then let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, just like that last listener, as you can imagine, I've gotten so many emails and calls about this whole JFK investigation. For instance, I have something here from John from Long Island, and he said he wants to convey his appreciation for the week-long series on the JFK assassination. It was the story of our times, and all right there in front of us, if only we saw. And he said years ago in the early 80s, just back from law school and new to Manhattan, I got involved in a kind of theater group producing a trilogy of theater plays, and they utilized the Kennedy family as an allegory to portray competing forces in nature, both good and evil. So it was an interesting time. One additional thing we did was research into the assassination of our heroes from the 1960s, including the other Kennedy brother, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. He says, your shows this week bring that time to mind. I remember listening to tapes of Martin Luther King early and late, and you could hear change the timbre of his voice. During rehearsals, my other job was that of a line reader, and he had to be ready for every actor and every line. So he was able to perform with some great actors. And he said, now a new century, and in like manner, 9/11, is the new story of our times, or a repeat of the same crimes with different clothes. And he wanted to share this with you. So that was one letter. And then another letter from Susan from New York City says, she works on Wall Street, and she listens to you every night, as many of us do. And she said, the series on JFK is quite simply the most profound, enlightening, and disturbing series that I've ever heard. Kudos to you and your producer for having the courage and the scholarship to put this together. If only more Americans could be exposed to this. She says, but we do have a debate in our office. Part of my work, she says, is risk assessment and research. On the one hand, Republicans say we need lower taxes and less regulation in order to stimulate the economy and let the free market guide the effort. On the other hand, the Democrats state we need higher taxes, more regulation, more government guarantees and subsidies with entitlements like Social Security and having the government oversee all of them. And she says, knowing that you're neither Democrat nor Republican, she would like to get your perspective on this.
My perspective on what specifically?
On the whole concept of the Republicans, I guess, versus the Democrats.
On whether we should increase taxes and reduce the size of government and get rid of regulations, or increase the size of bureaucracies and have more regulations. Okay.
Yeah.
I believe that there is some small element of truth in both, but in the majority of the cases on each side, they have missed the point. Let me explain it. Let's deconstruct the argument. Government should be there to serve our needs. So when we need the government, for example, we need it to help us with our commons, our forest, waterways, to help us if there's a river that is overflowing, or if we have natural disaster. We expect our government to be there to support us. We need the government, as historically has been the case, to help us with an educational system so everyone is allowed an opportunity to attend school, and that it serves in a good way. We need the government to support us for protecting us with police departments and fire departments. I would hate to think that the marketplace dictated so that only those who could afford a particular type of insurance could be qualified to have a fire put out. I would hate to think that if a person became so sick, or if there's a catastrophic accident, that a person would go bankrupt, which was the number one cause for 10 years of bankruptcy, medical bills, and yet not even have the best health care that there is. So I would say this. The regulation we need, but we're overregulated as a society. And unfortunately, many of the regulations we have are there to support ideologies. I believe our government is too large, way beyond its necessity, and every single study supports this. For example, the U.S. military has spent how much, Luann, in the last, let's say the last 15 years, or last, 15 to 16 years, how much has the government spent just the Pentagon?
I don't know.
$8.5 trillion of the taxpayer money.
Wow.
$8.5 trillion. And do you know it has never been accounted for? $8.5 trillion? Never accounted for. It's not possible to audit the Pentagon. The military waste and fraud are major. Because look at what $8.5 trillion could do if that money were spent on social services, on cleaning up neighborhoods and seeing that good health care and good educational system and good roads and proper living environment were maintained, then we wouldn't have ghettoized America. You could save a lot of that. You could probably save $5 to $6 trillion of that. That would come off the national debt. But these are all insiders. 100,000 people now lobby in Washington, D.C. It used to be 44,000. Now it's 100,000. And they hire ex-legislators, ex-department heads of the FDA and CDC and military people and give them enormous financial incentives. Wall Street says, make the laws that help us, like Robert Rubin went from Goldman Sachs to the Treasury Secretary and got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, and Henry Paulson went from Goldman Sachs to the Treasury and ended up giving the people on Wall Street a $740 billion bailout. And yet these are the same people who ask their pundits, like the people in the media, to say, we don't want socialism, you know, and we don't want redistribution of wealth. Well, this president has redistributed no wealth. He has concentrated wealth into the hands of those who got him selected and then elected. That's the irony. If we were redistributing wealth, we would allow these major corporations that failed to go through structured bankruptcy. Let the bondholders or let the stockholders lose, fire the executives that made bad decisions, and wipe off all the debt, which would have been well over $2 or $3 trillion or more from their books. And just Citigroup alone would have been $3 trillion. But instead, we didn't allow them to fail. We gave them socialism, $20 trillion, $16.1 trillion, then $3.1 trillion, and that didn't seem to be an issue to these people. So on the one hand, we have this contradiction of those who say, we want small government. Yeah, but you create huge government. So what is it? You want small government? You want huge government? I want a government that serves the people, not one that controls the people. So that's one issue. But then on the idea of taxation, the Democrats are clueless, especially the Nobel Prize-winning Democrats. They're an embarrassment. Why? Because we should have lower taxes. We shouldn't even have an income tax. We should have two taxes that would fund everything. And that would be one flat tax on all corporate income. But there would be no deductions. Do you know how many pages the U.S. tax code is, Luann?
I do not.
72,000 pages. There's
that's some good bathroom reading.
Yeah, there's whole law firms that are tax lawyers and CPAs just to show their clients how never to pay taxes. And in fact, the major corporations, the most profitable corporations in the United States, like Google and Microsoft and General Electric, they frequently don't pay any income tax at all. Have you heard what is called a transfer pricing or profit shifting or deferred income? What it means is this. Major corporations will take take an island, let's say it could be Bermuda, and they'll open up in one building has 18,000 corporations in it. These are all just little address boxes, but that's where they're a legal entity, and they'll take their profits and shift them into that little corporation so they don't have to pay taxes on that money in the United States. Currently, there's $32 to $33 trillion in profits sitting offshore in the United States.
Oh, my God.
All right, that's $32, $33 trillion. And they do this in over, right now, there's 50 countries that are tax havens. Ireland's a tax haven, Luxembourg. And so now you have some subsidiary in another country, so you can shift your profits. And this is all completely legal. And they hire the lobbyists, former legislators, to make sure it's all legal. So this isn't about redistributing wealth. This is about making sure that the money that you made, you keep all of it. All of it. So then when it comes time for the average person to be challenged, what are you contributing? I hear this all the time from the Rush Limbaughs and others, you know, the Sean Hannitys. Well, the average person actually contributes a higher percentage of their income than do these major multinational corporations. But let's just say that we made it one flat tax. You would eliminate the IRS. You would eliminate a 72,000-page U.S. tax code. You couldn't make any deductions. That would bring an additional $1.5 to $2 trillion into the United States Treasury each year. And especially if you put a simple 5% tax on every single transaction on Wall Street, that would immediately challenge those algorithm people and hedge funds. So now you've got taxes coming in that are actually low, let's say 20%. That's a very reasonable tax. And so everyone's paying 20% on corporate profits, which leaves you 80%. That would be fair. So you can actually lower the taxes, get rid of the income tax, and then have sales taxes. And those would be a floating scale sales tax, depending upon whether it's essential items or luxury items. And that way, states would have a budget, the federal government would have a budget, then cut back all the subsidies that the government gives to the special interest groups. That would save hundreds of billions of dollars a year. And then make the government accountable. Only have government to the size that it necessitates serving the public will and the public interest. If you did that, then you would also look at the fact that since the 1970s, we had a divergence, and this is a terrible divergence. We had the rise of a group of people in the United States that we had never seen before, at least not since the Gilded Age, from the 1850s through about 1920. We had the austere class, which grew, meaning austerity. They were making less money, taking home less money, and then we had the overcompensated class, running into the millions of people. We call them the elite. And these two were growing exponentially. Those were the two largest groups. One was stagnating. Their standard of living was going down. Their indebtedness was increasing. The other, their standard of living was increasing. Their compensation was exploding. And the quality of their life was just so ostentatious that it was everywhere. So what you have today is you have elites that are overcompensated, and average people are undercompensated. And that's the model we've been living with for the last 35 to 40 years. And when the average worker, when their salaries do not keep pace with productivity, then you have this divergence. And then you end up with terrible, corrosive social politics. And what happens then is you have the rise of a group of angry men and women who say, I don't like what I'm seeing. I don't like my standard of living. I don't like the nature of what's happening to the society I'm living in. I better find someone who speaks on my behalf. And then what you have is you have to Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh is simply an extension of all those people who believe that somehow they are entitled to what they get, but other people shouldn't be entitled. So he's going to be a populist speaker. Well, he's not a populist anything. And then you, on the other hand, you have Rush, from Rush Limbaugh, you have Lawrence O'Donnell, you have the left and the right, each trying to represent a populist position, but it's purely political, and they're making out like bandits. But people need someone to look towards when they feel that they're no longer able to be defined. And then you have the lawyers coming in who rewrite what is legal, and now they want to make the normal average person, if you protest, if you get, if you write a letter, if you go to any form of rally, you're now engaging in something that's considered a suspect act, and therefore you deserve to be watched, monitored, profiled. Now we find out this has been going on for some time. In fact, corporate espionage is on the increase, and even a new research shows from the Center for Corporate Policy that Greenpeace has been spied on, and Chevron was hiring people to spy on, and Walmart was sending an employee to infiltrate and secretly wire meeting of up against the wall in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So all these corporations now act like they're the National Security Agency and able to do whatever they want, because we, the people, who are finally saying enough, there's just too much exploitation. You're benefiting. We're not. We're working hard. And you are taking advantage of us. And they're now fearful of the American public. So that's where we stand today. So both the Democrats and Republicans are wrong. We need small, effective government. We need rules that protect us. And we do not need the 20,000 rules that have been given through the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, at the state level, without us knowing all along that they were whining and dining our state legislators, or at the federal level. Because one day you wake up and suddenly there's a law you didn't even know about. You don't know who passed it, why they passed it. All you know is now you are a victim of it. And that's why I keep talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So that's what we're dealing with. So as long as they control the argument, as long as they control the dialogue, they win. And that's why we have to get beyond the left and the right. We have to get to the truth, and you won't find the truth in either the left or the right. Hope that answers your question.
Sure does.
We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Mike Rupert. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Gary. Happy Sunday. It's been an amazingly powerful week. I guess the biggest saga, certainly around the world, that got most attention was my missing dog, Rags, who was returned to me through a miracle, actually. We'll talk about that tonight in the week of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK, and as the human race continues to march headlong at increasing speed towards its own demise. I've drafted an open letter to Arnie Gundersen asking some very obvious questions about Fukushima, six of them, in fact, which need to be answered right now in the interests of public
Great.
Safety.
Mike Rupert, right now.